crew.
Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
We're back. This is the Hour of Truth. I'm Dave. We've been gone for a while, and we missed you all. We hope you missed us. But we're back now. Without going into a lot of detail, I had a nasty round with pneumonia. I was sick there for about a week before I went to the doctor, a week or 10 days. And finally, I gave up and went to the doctor. I hate to take drugs of any kind, but I just knew I was into something I couldn't handle myself. And it really got a hold of me. Then there was a death in the family during that period and everything that goes along with that. But anyway, that's over, except for this permanent frog that's moved into my throat, it feels like. I'm sure he'll go away sooner or later, but if I clear my throat still once in a while, it's just some lingering effects. We're glad to be back. We've looked forward to this since we couldn't be with you. Several people have asked us where we're at, and we're glad to know that we were somewhat missed. 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. That gets you right into the studio, and we'll be talking to you if you give us a call. We got a lot to cover tonight. We're going to get right on it. We're going to talk a little bit about Obamacare and how it mixes in with this immigration reform bill that the Senate has passed that we need to be talking to our representatives about. We're going to talk about Ted Cruz and his crew and how they're jumping on the flat tax here with the IRS scandals. We're going to talk a little bit about FISA. George Bush gave us the Patriot Act. He gave us, if you want to be honest about it, all of the things that are going bad now with us being spied on by the NSA. We thank George Bush for that. Of course, Barack Obama took it to a different level, demonic as he is. And so we'll talk about what's going on there. We'll talk about the governor's veto of 436. But before we get to any of that, in the next segment, our good buddy Carl Bearden is going to come along, and he's going to talk to us about the governor trashing the budget that your representatives handed down. It seems like the Constitution says that when there's not enough income to pay the bills, since the state has to have a balanced budget, that the governor, since our legislature isn't in session full time, can go in and make the necessary cuts to keep us from overdrawing or from having to deficit spend, which we're not allowed to do. We'll talk to Carl about this. The governor has just recently announced that he's cutting $400 million from this year's budget, and we'll talk to Carl and see what's up with that. So without further ado, let's move on into our first segment. If you haven't been keeping up with the news, and if you have, there may be some questions in your mind about what's going on here. There was quite a bit of talk late 2 weeks ago and early last week, around the end of June, 1st of July, about how Obamacare was going to encourage employers to fire Americans and hire illegal aliens. Now, the talk got a little wild. It got a little out of hand, and the Washington Post gave Ted Cruz, who tweeted about this once, although he didn't start the ball rolling on this, but he was a name that was out there for attack. They gave him four Pinocchios, and Pinocchios in their fact checker is a level of lightum. But I note that with pleasure that those four Pinocchios caused a furor of research into what actually is going on. And you can go out there right now and Google this in any way, shape, or form and find hundreds of separate research items that have gone in, you know, journalists who have gone in to research this. And we find out that the Wall Street Journal earns five Pinocchios for giving Cruz four Pinocchios, when in fact, what happened here is this, and let's just lay this out. Obamacare requires employers, now not till 2014, but that's beside the point. That's a whole different issue. Obamacare requires employers to pay a $3,000 per employee penalty for any employee that they don't offer affordable health care. Now, there's no definition yet about what affordable is, and that's all a different issue. There's all of this. But the bottom line is, if your employer doesn't offer affordable health care, they get fined $3,000 per employee. Now, the majority of employers aren't going to do this because it costs more than $3,000 per employee to insure you. What they are going to do is either cut your hours so you're not a full-time employee and not covered under Obamacare, or they're going to offer you something that is going to be considered affordable that doesn't cost them anything but costs you a lot of money and therefore you have to buy. Or they're going to take this third alternative that has currently been offered them by the Senate-passed immigration reform bill. Now, understand that the Senate-passed immigration reform bill does not make illegal immigrants citizens. It makes them temporary legal immigrants, and that temporary status lasts up to 10 years, at which time they can apply for citizenship. But it's like having a 10-year green card. That's what it is. You're legal to stay here for this period of time. You're legal to work or to sponge off society. You're legal to, but the immigration reform bill says that no temporary, there's a name for it, and I've forgotten what it is. Temporary immigrant is, hold on just a second. Let me find the name for this thing. No temporary immigrant, anyway, is covered in any way, shape, or form by Obamacare. Now, I'm certain that someone along the line who read this thing, well, Jesus, probably nobody along the line read it. But I'm sure that this was part of an appeasement of the right to say, okay, you know, so Obamacare is not going to cover the health of these people who aren't citizens. But listen to what it means. It means that this temporary green carded alien is a person who an employer is encouraged to hire to assimilate them into the American culture, is encouraged to hire, is allowed to hire, and one who, because of the waiver of any of the provisions of Obamacare, the employer doesn't have to pay $3,000 a year for not covering. You take it from there, friend. Now, that is the facts. That is the facts. You're going to have employers who, in their own economic best interest, are going to choose not to be gouged by Obamacare and are going to let American workers go to hire these temporarily legal aliens, TLAs, temporarily legal aliens, that they don't have to pay $3,000 a year to not insure. I'm telling you, the House of Representatives has got some tricks yet up their sleeve with this version of theirs that they're trying to put together. Basically, what it's going to be is something that's unacceptable clearly to the other side that they can throw out there so that they can get into a conference committee and come to some thing that makes both Obama and Boehner happy, and they'll foist that off on us. That has to be what does not happen. The United States House of Representatives needs to just say no. They need to just say no to this whole thing. The whole thing is put together haphazardly. George Bush came out in favor of it today. If that tells you anything about how disastrous this thing could be, it has a ton of problems. This being one of them, and we'll cover some more of them as weeks go by, but we've just got too much to cover tonight. And you need to get on the phone right now with your member of the United States House of Representatives. You need to be writing letters. You need to be writing emails. You need to be writing every day saying the answer is no. No compromise on this thing. No conference committee. No, our bill's bigger than your bill. Nothing. Just get that thing to the floor for a vote and just say no and let it go. Let it go. Let them come back with something more acceptable. Force them to do the right thing. You can come back with your own version. That's fine. You can pass something that takes care of border security first and everything else second or third or fourth or never, and pass that over to them and let them say no to that. But don't do anything that doesn't secure the border first. Just say no. Do you know who your representative is? Get on the phone. Do you know who your representative is? Get them an email. Get them a snail mail. Get them anything. Get it out there every day. Bombard Washington, D.C. with just say no. No fancy tricks. No sleight of hand. Just say no. This thing is going to kill us. Okay, we're glad to be back, and we're going to talk in the next segment with Carl Bearden. The governor has taken a budget that, whether you like the budget or not, has come from the people that you elected to represent you in Jefferson City. So you elect people to represent you in Jefferson City, and they write a budget every year. That's their constitutional responsibility, is to write a budget and to make appropriations. It is not the—I don't know where we ever got this idea that it is the job of the executive branch. You know, the president comes out every year with his budget that goes over to the Congress, and the Congress says yes or no or piddles around with it a little bit. Excuse me again. I'm not sure how it ever became. Maybe we'll look up the history of that someday. I don't want to say responsibility because it clearly isn't, but the right or the privilege of an executive branch to issue a budget. Now, what they should issue, because they are the executors, is a needs statement. You know, we need this in the Department of Defense. We need this in the Department of the Treasury. We need this to buy paperclips for the White House, and that really ought to be all we need because the Constitution doesn't even say we can have a Department of Education, a Department of Homeland Security, Department of the Interior, Department of Housing and Urban Renewal, the Department of you know what, you name it all. We can't have a Department of State, yes, so let's say we need some money for that. But it is the statutory and constitutional responsibility of the House of Representatives to initiate budgets. and for the Senate to concur with those budgets. Any money spending bills have to start in the House of Representatives. I don't think that's true in the state of Missouri. We'll ask Carl about that when he comes along. I'm not a Missouri state constitutional scholar. I've read it two or three times, but so what's happened is Governor Nixon has come along with this year's budget, which was passed after some heartache and quite a bit of debate and some sound discussion. And he said, okay, I'm just going to cut $400 million out of the budget. And so the argument is, can he do that or can he not? You know, FISA is a secret court that has been set up deep within the bowels of the government. You don't get to know anything that these people talk about. You don't get to know any case that's come before them. But it was established by the Patriot Act, and its authority was widened by recent amendments. We heard quite a bit about the Patriot Act and the widening of the federal authority back during the 2012 elections when we tried our best to hold this against some candidates who had voted for it. But now we find FISA getting out of bounds, I mean, is the only thing you can say with the things that they're allowed. I mean, for example, just the things we know about. The Snowden thing. Of course, FISA said it was all right for the NSA to eavesdrop on your phone calls, to read your Facebook entries. And come on now. Be serious. You know, anything you put on Facebook, do you have an expectation of privacy? No, not really. So you're pretty stupid if you indict yourself on Facebook anyway. But anyway, all of those things, including your emails, your phone calls, they can all be monitored now by the NSA. Now, theoretically, the NSA doesn't save these things. Here's what it is. They can't, according to them now, they capture the fact that you made a phone call and what number you called and how long the call lasted. And they store that in a great big pool. And I heard and all the other phone calls. So there's just billions and billions and billions of phone calls stored in this pool. Same with emails. Billions of emails stored in this pool. I heard an analogy today about, yeah, what we've done is we've stocked the pool with a lot of fish, but we're not going fishing in it. The argument is we need this data that we can fall back to. You know, I mean, what happens if we need to track down some upcoming terrorist event and the conversation has been lost, but now we can go to the pool and we can pick out that conversation and we can listen to it and we can see if it links up with any other conversations. We now have all the calls that ever went on between these two people and these people and anyone else. So when it comes down to just getting right to listening to the phone calls of David Court, well, we'll never do that, you know. I don't know. Call us and tell us what you think about that. Call us and tell us what you think of FISA. You know, I read again today when I was discussing this Second Amendment Act that we're going to talk about later in the show, Second Amendment Preservation Act in Jefferson City, about how we need to maintain some balance between. Well, you know, the only balance is, here's the Constitution. There's no more balance. There's no balancing the Constitution. It just is that simple. So give us a call here in the next segment. Let us know where you stand on that one. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Carl Bearden about how things are going on in Jefferson City. We might even ask him to weigh in on this 436 while we got him. Carl's a great guy. You know, I just decided today at the last minute, I mean really the last minute, to cover this budget issue on tonight's show. And I got a hold of Carl and said, hey, you know, I know it's only like in 3 hours from now, but can you be available to give me some expertise on this? And good old Carl said, sure, I'd love to. God bless him. I think the man's on vacation. And he's going to come along and share with you and with us his thoughts as someone who's been there, his thoughts as someone who knows what goes on in the executive offices and in the legislative offices. And he's going to tell us a little bit about this. Thanks, Carl. We'll be looking forward to hearing from you in a minute. And off we go to a commercial break. Give me a chance to rest my hoarse voice. We'll be back in just a minute.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
You know, if you want to look up some stuff before we actually get to that segment, HB 436, the one we're going to talk about tonight, the one the governor vetoed, is the Second Amendment Preservation Bill. It makes it it nullifies any federal law that that restricts the ownership of guns on Missouri citizens. It holds the state of Missouri sovereign when it comes to protecting the rights of its citizens to the Second Amendment rights they have in the United States Constitution and the rights that they have in the Constitution of the state of Missouri. And so you want to look that up. Go to house.mo.gov. Go to bill tracking and look up HB 436 before we get to that segment and read it over. Read over some of the comments that were made on the Facebook page at Missouri Grassroots Coalition. That's Facebook, Missouri Grassroots Coalition. And then join in the conversation. It's a really delicate thing there. I mean, I know where I stand. I know where my friends on the other side stand, and I applaud them for their stand. It's something that we all need to sit down and think about. We have a veto session coming up in September. We'll ask Carl about that too, but I believe it's the first week of September when the legislators will get together and they'll decide which of these bills that the governor has vetoed, and there's a crap load of them this year, they're going to override. Override potential is higher this year than it's been in many previous years because there is a, what they call a veto-proof majority in both the House and the Senate. And so, theoretically, there are enough Republicans. If everything fell along party lines, there are enough Republicans in both the House and Senate to override any veto the governor did. Should they override HB 436? That is the question. There are some bills that Governor Nixon vetoed that should never have been made bills to start with. They're back again this year with that surtax on automobiles that you buy outside the state, the use tax, and the governor's vetoed that again. And last year when he vetoed it, the House and Senate did not override the veto. They let the veto stand, and those are the kinds of things they should let stand. Those are the kinds of things that should have never gotten through a quote-unquote conservative legislature to start with. But seriously, folks, pull up some of the names and look at them, and you'll realize that in Missouri, just like everywhere else, Republican does not mean conservative. And even if you're conservative, you don't agree with more than half of the things that go on in the state legislature, and probably you don't agree with more than 25% of the things that go on in the federal legislature. If you're libertarian, that percentage rides down to near zero. The government is just too damn big. That's all there is to it. I don't know. I don't know if we can ever fix it, but we have to try because the government belongs to us. And we have a lot of people sitting in both Jefferson City and in Washington, D.C., who somehow were raised thinking that we belong to the government. And we cannot let that kind of thing go on, or we're lost. Quite frankly, I think, you know, democracy / republicanism, what we have here, a democratic republic, liberty in general, cannot exist in a place where it is not the will of the people to have liberty. Yes, in fact, all human beings are created equal and are endowed by their creator with certain rights. Life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, the right to property, all these things that that Locke and Jefferson and Madison talk about. Sure. But it's not the way of the world. It's the way of the United States, or it has been the way of the United States of America. And we have found, to our own dismay, that we can't go around the world and instill liberty in people. Liberty is not going to happen anywhere that the people don't want it. It just isn't going to. And so we don't get to go to Iraq and instill liberty. If the people don't want liberty, they're not going to get it. That doesn't mean that they are not created equal and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. They certainly are. But until they are ready to reach out and take those rights, until they are ready to be a people who want liberty, it's not going to happen. And that brings us to wonder to what extent Americans want liberty. You know, you just see it. You see it election after election after election. They put these big government people in there. Big government is anti-liberty. And so you have to say, how many Americans want liberty? And if they don't want it, they don't deserve it. And we might as well, I'm not going to say we should throw up our hands. We should continue to try to teach people to want it. We should continue to try to instill in people the desire to live the way God intended them to live. And I don't know how I got off on that, but I did, and so there it is. And we're going to go talk to Carl now, I think. Is that you, Carl?
Hey, David, sure is.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well. Good to hear you back.
Hey, yeah, thanks for joining us tonight. I was telling people what kind of short notice I gave you, and I sure appreciate you coming along. Are you on vacation out there?
Actually, I am, so.
Well, okay. We appreciate you taking a little time to come talk to us. We were talking earlier about this, and I don't know a lot about it, so I was just telling people to hang on until you got here. And then they could call in at 347-677-1835 with any questions they had. But if I'm not mistaken now, the legislature is constitutionally required as our representatives to pass a budget. Am I right?
Correct.
And that is their responsibility.
A balanced budget.
A balanced budget, exactly. They can't borrow money and they can't deficit spend.
Correct.
And then, because I suppose the legislature isn't in 12 months a year, along comes July, and it's apparent that there isn't going to be enough revenue to pay these bills. The governor can and really has to make some adjustments.
Right. Right.
And so, day before yesterday, Governor Nixon announced that he was, quote unquote, adjusting the budget by $400 million. And you take it from there. Then comes a big argument about constitutionality, and you take it from there, Carl.
Right. Well, there's one step that happens too before they actually do the budget, and it's called a consensus revenue estimate. And in the old days, if we shall, let's call it that. The House used to have their estimate for revenues, the Senate had their estimate for revenues, and the governor had his. And so they weren't always the same, so they would be budgeting to potentially three different numbers. And John Ashcroft's term, they came up with this consensus revenue estimate so that all three agreed to what the amount of money would be available to budget toward. And that kind of smoothed out the budget process. As far as I know, there's only been two times that consensus revenue estimate has never been agreed to, and I've been the budget chairman both times that happened. But they have this consensus revenue. The governor agreed to this consensus revenue estimate along with the legislature, and that's what the budget was based on. And so, lo and behold, the governor signs this budget, and betting on a potential override on a bill that he vetoed, he said there's going to be a shortfall in revenues. Now, he really has no basis for doing that. He certainly has no constitutional basis for doing it because the Constitution says that the only time he's supposed to withhold is when there is a shortfall in the estimated revenues on which the budget was based, and that simply is not occurring.
Right. In fact, there's a bit of a surplus there the way things are looking right now. Am I right?
That's correct. So they closed the books as of June 30th, and
right,
all of the bills and budget was covered, and they still had somewhere between $339 million to $750 million left over. And it's closer to the lower end once you close everything out and so on and so forth. So the governor withheld approximately $400 million, and he withheld it coincidentally enough. I mean, these are just accidental withholdings, you know, from education, because nobody gets upset about building money.
Right.
And he withheld it. He withheld it from health care issues. Nobody gets upset about health care issues. There's no constituency there. And he withheld it from the arts and some other things. And so what he has been doing is using those hostages that he's taking now, because that's exactly what he's doing. He's withholding for something he does not have really the authority and has no reason to withhold, turning them into hostages and using them to try to convince the legislature not to override the vetoes, because now we have these hostages, and this is commonplace. It happened when I was budget chairman. These hostages quickly fall into the Stockholm syndrome. So they're
right,
defending their hostage taker.
Right.
And so now they're sending out all these emails to legislators. Oh, here's what the governor's done. Here's what he's going to do. You have to not override this veto because you must save us from this.
Yeah.
And he's right to do that.
So to connect the dots here for the listeners, Carl, because I didn't get into this before, this all falls back even further to this bill that the Missouri legislature passed that got us closer to a consumption tax by lowering the income tax on corporations and small businesses by lowering infinitesimally the income tax on individuals and by increasing infinitesimally the sales tax. And the governor said that's going to have a shortfall, so I'm going to veto it. And now you say all of these things that he's doing are messages to the legislature: you damn well better not override this veto, or everybody's going to pay.
Right, right. I'll drop them. I'll come in. And there are a couple of corrections to be made. One
okay.
is there's no tax increase in this bill. There was a version early on that had a sales tax increase, but that is not the version that passed.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And so what we're talking about is the first state income tax reduction cut in almost 100 years. Now,
right.
I wasn't around in 1921, which was the last time that the it cut the income tax, but it's been that long since we've had an income tax. When we talk about an income tax, and it is a small step forward in reducing the income tax for individuals and for small businesses, and a little larger one for corporations. But in every case, it takes 5 years minimum to put this into place. The small business pass-through tax that is in there, you get to not have to report 50% of your business income
right.
if you're a small business, Schedule S. That doesn't get fully phased in for 5 years. The individual income tax, a 0.5% reduction, the corporate tax of 3%, that doesn't occur for 10 years. And to top it all off, those last two don't occur at all unless the state collects $100 million more than it did the year before. So in order for those reductions to go into place, the state will have to have collected $1 billion more than it did this year. And you don't get that from the governor. You don't hear that trigger.
Right. And so the fact is that, if I'm hearing you right, is that even if this bill becomes law over the governor's objection, there won't be any $400 million shortfall because of this bill, certainly in the next 12 months.
No, that is correct.
Yeah.
Because the implementation of this bill first does not even start until January 1st of 2014. And
okay,
we're talking
so
about
go ahead. I'm sorry.
A very, very small reduction. So we're talking about the last 6 months of this current fiscal year, you will start seeing the impact. And it's a very small impact. It's probably about $50 million, perhaps. We already know we had $339 million brought over from last year, and so we're already good. We're still $280 million to the good.
The
surplus we have.
And our rainy
so the
day
governor,
fund.
Though, is holding everybody hostage. Pardon?
And our rainy day fund is still good.
Well, yeah. See, the rainy day fund gets funded regardless of what else happens.
And right.
So the Constitution of the state of Missouri requires that 7% of the projected general revenue is placed into this Access to Cash Operating Reserve Fund.
Okay.
And half of that can be used for a rainy day fund. It is always funded.
Okay.
It is always funded first.
Yeah.
But what they're saying is they want to use this for a rainy day fund when we already have one there. And what they're really saying is this first state income tax in nearly 100 years – let you and I and all the rest of the Missourians who pay state income taxes, everybody gets a tax. That's not just the rich. You'll hear that. Everybody who pays state income tax in the state of Missouri, and we have one of the most regressive income taxes in the country.
Right.
You get a tax cut. And you know, what they're really saying is we, state government, can spend your money much better than you can, so we're not going to get it back to you.
Right. And that's the argument for both the state and federal level from the big
right.
government people always.
Yes.
Okay, so where do we go from here, Carl? Is this likely to see? I know the Supreme Court is still not decided on one case similar to this from way back in 2011.
Right.
There
have been different cases brought about this, but none of them are the same. And so here we have with a surplus. There's no question there's a surplus. There's no question that a shortfall does not exist for fiscal year 2014 because, first off, the bill has not been overridden. Secondly, even if it is overridden, the fiscal note for 2014 is much less than the surplus, so there is no shortfall. And so he really doesn't have authority. So those are cases. This case will have to be decided on that direction. So here's where we're at right now. the governor is going to play his political game. He's actually, you know, there's a lot of talk about bullying bills, you know, anti-bullying bills. He's being a bully right now.
Yeah.
He's politically bullying not only the people that he's withholding the money from and holding hostage, he is trying to bully the legislature into not doing what is best for the people of Missouri, and that's let them keep more of the money.
Right. Okay, when is the veto session, Carl? First week of September?
It is September 11th. It's always the first Wednesday after the second Monday of September, according to the Constitution. So September 11th, there will be a veto session that will come up in the House first because it's a House bill, House Bill 253.
Right.
From Representative Barry. And so you can go online at house.mo.gov and up in the upper right-hand corner, put in HB 253 and read all about it, read the summaries and so forth, and the fiscal note. And so it'll come up in the House, and they need 109 votes to override the governor. And then they need 23 votes in the Senate. The Senate is going to happen, but it has to pass the House first, and that's where you have to work. And some of the House Republicans, you know, they're getting beat up on by their school districts, who my experience with these school districts are, first off, you can never give them enough money. You can give them every dollar you collect, and it's not going to be enough.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Play more lottery.
And we had yeah, exactly. Well, we had this similar situation when I was budget chairman. We passed the fiscal year 2004 budget exactly 10 years ago, and immediately Governor Holden withheld $240 million from education. Now, under his conditions, we had just had 3 years where every year we had collected less money than the previous year. But we had done a lot of work. I had hired an outside guy, you know, an economist and so on and so forth, not a government guy, you know, to make some projections. And we knew that the economy was turning around. And so we passed a budget based on that. He withheld that. The schools, I went around almost every month giving briefings to superintendents all around the state and showing them almost to the penny where our projections were correct and the governor was wrong. And almost in every case, I said, we want to believe you, but we have to go with the governor. And again, Stockholm syndrome. You know, here's our hostage taker, but we like him and we're going to have to defend him. And that's exactly what's happening. Now, interestingly enough, the budget director today is Linda Lubering. She was the budget director during Governor Holden's term when all this happened before, and she left the state and is now returned. And then you have lobbyists, paid lobbyists like Jim Moody, who, you know, worked in the Ashcroft administration in OA and was budget director. And, you know, so he kind of rides that reputation, but he's a hired gun. He's been hired by the crony capitalist of Kansas City. They're actually named the Civic Council of Kansas City, but we call them the crony capitalists of Kansas City because they, and most of them live in Kansas, by the way, but their businesses are some of the largest recipients of tax credits in the state of Missouri.
Sure.
And what happens when you eventually reduce income taxes? Tax credits go away. And so self-interest.
Right. Okay, Carl. So we want to be watching for what the legislature does. We want to be calling our representatives about this thing.
You want to call your representatives and your senator, you know, Democrat or Republican, and you need to be telling them. And we'll be doing some work on that with another group. We've got coalitions going, grassroots. We've got business groups. I mean, this is a pretty strong coalition that crosses all sorts of boundaries, political boundaries. But you need to be contacting your legislator. Both Senate and Representative, and letting them know that the first state income tax in almost 100 years deserves to be in place, the governor overridden, and that you can spend your money much better than they can.
Yeah, and that's another point, theoretically. I mean, there's not an infinite amount of money. There's a finite amount of money, and if you put that money in my pocket, I'm going to spend it, and there's going to be a tax collected on what I spend. So, so theoretically, I mean, it's all going to turn out about the same.
Right, government. You know, we know that government stimulus does not work.
Right.
Now, does that mean, you know, building roads doesn't put money in people's pockets? It absolutely does. The government stimulus, the taking of our money to do things that we ought to be doing.
Right.
I mean, if I go down and spend a dollar at your store, that dollar goes a lot further. You know, when you pay the sales tax,
that's
when
exactly
you buy,
right.
You know, you buy your inventory, you pay your employees. That dollar goes a lot further by me spending it than any government dollar would do.
That's right. That's right. Because the government just takes my taxes plus your taxes plus 70 other people's taxes and pays the salary of some guy who's building a bridge and then only collects back 11% of that money.
I mean, you look at the bureaucracy that they have to support.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, this is our buddy Carl Bearden. He is the big guy at United for Missouri, and he's available to you folks at unitedformissouri.com, right, Carl?
.org.
.org. So you folks head on over there and see what he's all about. Now, this is the guy right here who has stayed on top of this Department of Revenue thing for all of you. And we owe him a lot for that. I mean, he has really, really taken that all the way. And if we get anything positive out of this, we owe Carl a lot for that. Carl, we're going to come back in the next segment and talk about 436. You want to weigh in on that?
Well, I think I better go. I've had enough vacation for my wife. So
there you go. There you go. Okay. What do you think? What do you think? Just two minutes. Override it or not? Yeah.
Well, I think there are some issues with 436, but I think those are issues that the legislature can address. Look, there are no perfect bills ever passed.
Right.
And so if you have to come back and fix something, fix it. But I think the overall good outweighs the bad in 436.
Okay. All right. And that's it from Carl Bearden. We thank you, Carl. Appreciate you taking time from your vacation to come along and help us out on that $400 million debacle. Okay, thanks. Good night.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that.
That was Carl Bearden, UnitedForMissouri.org, and he is the guy that I turn to when I have questions about things like what I had tonight. He's been there. He's done that. You heard he was at one time chairman for 2 years, I believe. He was chairman of the Budget Committee. So he knows how that works, and when it comes to things and how things go on the inside up there, and yes, we do get current legislators on the show, and we do talk to them usually about the specific issues of the day, much like this specific issue of the day. But when we want to know what really goes on behind the scenes, you can't talk to a current legislator because they're going to protect their interests, their political interests, inside the rotunda. And that's just the way that's always going to go. So I turn to Carl every time I have questions about what's going on behind the scenes and how things really work. You can go back if you want to get something educational, and go back to Missouri Grassroots Coalition.org and click on the radio button up at the top and go to the Hour of Truth. Go back to a couple of segments called Schoolhouse Rock Revisited, and Carl and I spend about 4 hours over two different shows talking about how a bill actually becomes law about, and it's not just as simple as the old Schoolhouse Rock thing. There's a lot of politics goes on, a lot of dickering, a lot of back and forth. And so I turn to Carl when I want things like that. We're going to come back in just a minute. We're going to move on with this flat tax thing. But first of all, let's hear about the Secret Santa.
His life so dear, for peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic. You better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. You wrote the book with a movie in mind.
Can you talk if you haven't got a brain?
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
Okay, we've covered an awful lot of material already tonight, and we're going to cover a little bit more. Ted Cruz, who is many, many, again, quote, unquote, conservatives, baby doll for the next presidential run, is really, really blasting all over the country, getting people and getting a lot of representatives on board for passing a flat tax. He's talking about, and rightly so, about what's going on in the IRS now, and talking, and rightly so, about how what's going on in the IRS leads us to understand more and more as days go by, that we need to totally do away with this monster that we've created. And he's pushing this flat tax. Now, why, after all these years, do you see these legislators getting on board with the flat tax? Well, think about this for a second. What is, we all know, that the best tax system proposed to date is the fair tax. We all know that the fair tax does a couple of things, but one of the things that it does is it takes power away from politicians. No longer do politicians get to buddy up to the corporations that donated to them with tax breaks and tax shelters. No longer do they get to use the tax code to penalize you and or businesses for improper behavior or reward them for proper behavior, as defined by them, of course, always. No longer do they get to funnel money back and forth between the government and businesses in a crony capitalistic way. No more do they get to put big money in their own pockets from lobbyists who want the federal government to curry them with tax favors. The fair tax's primary advantage is that it takes this power, the power that's been built into the tax code, away from politicians in Washington and gives it back to the people. Ted Cruz don't want that. I hate to bust your bubble, conservatives, but Ted Cruz don't want that any more than any of the rest of them do. And the flat tax reserves that power for them. It's still an income-based tax. It keeps the tax on corporations. It keeps letting them allow tax breaks to corporations for political favor. It allows them to continue to adjust tax rates without you knowing it. and it continues the unfairness of different tax rates for different people. Under the guise of someone who makes more money than you paying their quote-unquote fair share, Ted Cruz doesn't want fairness. Ted Cruz wants to maintain power. So don't, I mean, because the time is right, and it is, don't get me wrong, the time is right to do something dramatic here. That something dramatic isn't the flat tax. That's not dramatic. That doesn't do anything. That keeps all of the power right there in the Congress where they want it. That keeps a 2-3-tiered tax system, which is what they want. It keeps a tax on income, which is what they want. And none of those things is what you should want. If you do, then, well, maybe you're a conservative, I guess. Or maybe you're a liberal, because that's pretty much a common thread, isn't it, between conservatives like Ted Cruz and liberals like John McCain. So that's what's going on behind this drive for the fair tax. There's no concern in there for the inappropriate behavior of the IRS. There's no concern in there for you. There's certainly no concern in there for fairness. There is a concern for, oh my God, something's going to give here, and we better get on the right side of preserving some of the power that we've got and not letting that slip out of our hands. That's what this is all about. Because if it wasn't, Ted Cruz would be on board with a fair tax, and you know it. If it wasn't that, then there would be a drive in the United States House of Representatives right now for HB 25, the fair tax, and you know it. The fact of the matter is that it still is all about power, and it still is all about political favor. 347-677-1835. 347-677-1835. I'll flash back for just a minute to that last promo. Missouri Grassroots Coalition has one thing and one thing alone that we collect money for. We don't collect dues. We don't collect money for any political activity. We don't collect money to buy paper clips. We don't collect money for anything except Secret Santa. And Secret Santa is a tremendous program. We start collecting money in February every year for the following Christmas. And we do that because we know that the hardest time of the year for us to come begging for money is the same hardest time of the year for you to give. It's right in that November, December time frame when everyone is after your money. I mean, and I don't mean everyone is after your money as in a bad way. I mean, you've got your Toys for Tots, you've got your angel trees, you've got your red kettles, you've got your Salvation Army, you've got your soup kitchen. You've got everybody who has needs, legitimate needs in November and December. And so they're all out there to get your money, as well as your increase in entertainment and family costs, as well as Christmas for your own family. So what we ask is that along about February or May or July, when you can afford it, when everyone's not got their hand in your pocket, that you go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and that you click on the Secret Santa button and that you from there click on the PayPal button and throw us a couple of bucks for this Secret Santa thing. We go out on Christmas Eve. We go into one of the stores, not one of the stores, many of the stores, many of MGC's little elves go into many stores, and as many as you allow us to, and we find a layaway with just toys in it. We don't you know, buy anybody kitchen tables or fuzzy little balls for the mirror of their car. We find layaways that aren't going to be paid off in time for Christmas, and we pay them off with the money that you graciously send us. And we call the folks and say, please come and get your child's toys and get them home in time for Christmas. And the people are overjoyed, and we are overjoyed, and we hope that you are overjoyed that you've been a part of MGC Secret Santa. This is the third year we've done it. We're looking for a huge, huge increase from last year. The economy is getting a little better. And so please, please, please reach in, go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, click on the Secret Santa button and use PayPal right there to send us, a couple of dollars toward the Secret Santa thing. Will you please? And we would appreciate it. And somewhere, on Christmas Eve, 2014, some, child is also going to appreciate it. Going to take a minute. We're going to come back for our final segment where we're going to talk about HB 436. If you want to get on that, 347-677-1835. Get in on it. House Bill 436, the Second Amendment Preservation Act, vetoed by Governor Nixon. Hello. It's Dave, and I'm here to tell you that on Saturday nights at 7 o'clock, we talk about the fair tax on the Fair Tax Show. That Saturday night at 7 o'clock on Missouri Grassroots Radio, we explode the myths, we tell the truth, we get to the bottom of this tax code that ought to be the one to replace the IRS. Get involved in the discussion. Learn everything there is to learn. 347-677-1835, Saturday, 7 o'clock p.m., Missouri Grassroots Radio.
The emergency destruct system is now activated.
Here we are. We're back. Yeah, listen, Saturday nights, we do it. We do the Fair Tax Show. We spent the last show, we spent the 2 hours enlightening you on exactly how much tax you pay. Most people, I would say 90% of the people in the United States of America have no clue how much tax they pay. They know how much they get back at the end of the year. I'll guarantee you that. But the concept of how much do you make? Oh, I take home about, well, that's not what I asked you. How much do you make? They don't know how much money they made last payday. They only know how much they took home. The difference between what they know and what they made is what Uncle Sam stole from them. And then there's taxes added on to those taxes. And then there's payroll withholding taxes. And then there's Medicare taxes, and then there's Social Security taxes, and then there's taxes on the taxes. And we break that down in the first show. And if you want, go back to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, click on the radio button at the top, and go to the Hour of Truth. No, I'm sorry. Go to the Fair Tax Show and listen to that first show. We're going to come back Saturday night, and we're going to talk about why. Why it is that they can hide this number from you so easily. Where did that come from? Where came from the idea that the government could use sleight of hand to hide from you how much of your money they were stealing? We're going to talk about that in depth on Saturday night on the Fair Tax Show. But right now, we're going to talk about Missouri House Bill 436. This is a bill that was passed overwhelmingly by both houses of the legislature and sent to the governor. It basically preserves the Second Amendment. Now, this is clearly important for, and this is something that conservatives, that you conservatives have a hard time wrapping your head around. The Second Amendment of the United States Constitution, as well as the First through Tenth Amendments of the United States Constitution, don't bind the state of Missouri. In other words, the state of Missouri is not bound by the Second Amendment of the Constitution to do nothing to interfere with your right to bear arms. The only people bound by the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution is the United States Congress. The United States Congress cannot in any way interfere with your right to bear arms. Now, they have. The fact of the matter is they have. And so Missouri came down with what they call the Second Amendment, and the Missouri Constitution, by the way, does prohibit to some extent, to a very, very great extent, let's be serious, the Missouri state legislature from infringing on your right to bear arms, okay? So let's be fair about that. But the Missouri legislature overwhelmingly passed this bill that says the federal government cannot do anything to a Missouri citizen to infringe upon their right to bear arms. In other words, the Second Amendment we adopt. We say the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution carries through to the state of Missouri. Now, we can say that. See, the federal government can't say that. The Supreme Court's got it wrong. This is where the federal government's got it wrong. The federal government in and of itself can't say to a citizen of the state of Missouri, you cannot pray in your workplace. Now, they can and must say that you cannot lead a prayer in a federal facility. But they cannot say you can't pray in your workplace. They can't say you can't. So the federal government nor the Supreme Court has the constitutional power. They all have usurped power. But they have no constitutional power to force any amendment down onto the state as part of their prohibition or responsibility. Those prohibitions apply only to the federal government. So anyway, what 436 did was it was the Missouri legislature saying we recognize, the citizens of the state of Missouri recognize our rights under the Second Amendment of the Constitution of the United States. You federal people, according to your own Constitution, cannot do anything to restrict our right to bear arms. And so, if you come down here and try to enforce on us a federal law that infringes on our right to bear arms, you've committed a crime in the state of Missouri. That sounds good. That sounds fine. You know, that is Missouri saying to the federal government, you're not allowed to do this according to your own constitution. And so we're going to protect our people from something that you're not allowed to do to them. Unfortunately, someone in a Senate committee substitute, that is the bill that actually got passed, the Senate committee substitute, got a little over anxious. You'll never convince me that this was not a poison pill designed to destroy this bill, because it's so apparent in my mind that any moron reading this bill would have picked up on this. I mean, I'm no rocket scientist, and I picked up on it right away when I read the bill weeks and weeks ago. Excuse me. But in the bill, in some sordid attempt to keep this thing that happened up in the Northeast somewhere where the newspaper printed all the, published all the names of the concealed carry permit owners, in an attempt to stop that, the Missouri legislature inserted a line that said no one can publish the name of a concealed carry permit owner. Period. That's it. You can't publish the name of a concealed carry permit owner. Now, first of all, what is the stupidity in saying you can't publish the name of a concealed carry permit holder? I mean, what if I went out today and drove drunk and ran over a two-year-old baby and killed him? Could the paper not publish my name because I'm a concealed carry permit holder? That's what this law says. You cannot publish the name of a concealed carry permit holder. So, nothing to do with the fact that I have a concealed permit. Nothing to do with anything except the fact that I ran over in a drunken stupor a baby. And they couldn't publish my name. I mean, but let's get past that. Let's just say that no one in the state of Missouri would ever try to take that to court. There is a real problem that I have, and a real problem that you'd ought to have with this two wrongs makes a right thing, okay? So it's wrong, it's wronger than sin for the federal government to violate the United States Constitution by making any law that infringes on the right of a American citizen to keep and protect their family. But that is not going to be made right by any law that you can make that, along with preserving your right to protect, says we're going to punish the press for anything they print. I mean, you cannot punish there's only one thing that the press can do that is punishable, and that's punishable civilly, and that is tell a lie. The defense for anything the press publishes is the truth. So all the press should ever have to do to justify anything they publish is show it's true. So if it's true that I'm a concealed carry permit holder and they get a hold of that information, then they can certainly publish it constitutionally, legally, and nothing should or can constitutionally be done to stop them from doing that. You know, you don't get to in any way penalize or even disrespect the Department of Homeland Security for coming down to Missouri and saying, send us the names of all your of gathering those names, of comparing them to Social Security records of people who've said that they're mentally unstable and so they need some Social Security benefits. All those are legitimate. What you do get to penalize is the person who works for you in the state of Missouri, who answers to the state of Missouri, who releases that information. In other words, you don't get to penalize the New York Times for publishing the Pentagon Papers. You do get to jail Daniel Ellsberg for cutting them loose. You know, you don't get to penalize the Chicago Sun-Times for publishing the story about the NSA stealing your emails. You know, you get to punish Snowden for letting that out. And God bless him. We're glad we all know it, but the guy broke the law. So my vote is 436 veto stands. Now, the bullshit stuff the governor said, and this is what saddens me about that whole silly, stupid one sentence that caused his veto to be right. And it is that I would have loved to have seen his supremacy argument fought out once more in court. His supremacy argument is bullshit. The federal government is supreme under the Supremacy Clause in any law that it makes to carry out its rights, duties, and obligations under the United States Constitution. So, in other words, borderline, maybe Roberts was right in the Arizona ruling, you know? Because the federal government is responsible for immigration law. Now, it's a whole different argument besides nullification when the federal government isn't carrying out its responsibility. But the fact of the matter is that a state could not nullify the federal government's treaty with another country. A state can't pass a law that says it's going to coin its own money. They can't pass a law that says Missouri owns the Mississippi River. Those are things that are relegated to the federal government. So the federal government is supreme when it comes to any law they make to enforce their responsibilities under the United States Constitution. But the federal government is not supreme when it comes to anything that they're not authorized to do in the first place. They are certainly not authorized to make any law that infringes on your right to keep and bear arms. That's a for sure. I don't care what the seven-robed idiots say. I don't care what the president says. I don't care what Nancy Pelosi says. The federal government is not authorized and is in fact prohibited from doing anything to infringe your right to keep and bear arms. I don't care who you are. I don't care what you've done. The federal government cannot infringe upon your right to keep and bear arms. Now, a state government can. The state can say if you're a committed felon, you can't have a gun. The state can say if you're mentally unstable, you can't have a gun. The state can say if you dye your hair purple, you can't have a gun. And so the Supremacy Clause doesn't even apply here, and the governor spent about three-fourths of his letter just spouting out some bullshit that either he himself doesn't believe or that shows him to be totally ignorant. But unfortunately, then we get down to that last paragraph. And in my mind, the governor hit on the problem. So what? So bring 436 back and get it right next time, and then push it again and let the governor do what he will. I say no override on 436 veto because it's an unconstitutional law. I mean, it's clearly and patently a violation of both the Missouri state constitution that does give the press a right to free speech and publishing, and it's a violation of the rights that people have to freely publish information and to speak openly. Notice that I didn't say that it is a violation of people's rights under the First Amendment of the Constitution of the United States. And why? Because the First Amendment of the Constitution of the United States cannot prevent the state of Missouri from infringing in and of itself on your right to free speech or the right to a free press. However, the Missouri Constitution does do so. And so the law that the governor vetoed is in fact unconstitutional in the state of Missouri. We're going to take one more quick break. I'm going to catch my breath and feed this frog, and then we're going to come back. We're going to wrap up for tonight, and we're going to leave you until Saturday.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for Grassfire Alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
There's a conflict in every human heart between the rational and the irrational, between good and evil. It does not always triumph. Sometimes the dark side overcomes what Lincoln called the better angels of our nature.
Sometimes it does, doesn't it? And you don't see that anywhere more vividly than you see it in the politics of the United States of America. Okay, so we come away from tonight's show with some action items. You need to be on the phone. You need to be pounding the emails. You need to be sending letters to your United States representatives and telling them no. Now, we're talking about your members of the House of Representatives, your members of the Senate. They already let you down on this one, okay? So you need to be getting a hold of your member of the House, your representative, and it wouldn't hurt to bang out something to the speaker as well and say, just say no to this immigration reform. Because this immigration reform, I mean, aside from being just a piece of crap, it encourages employers to release American workers and hire temporary legal aliens in their place by exempting those temporary workers from the fines for not being insured. Okay, we need to keep an eye on this movement that's going on in the United States legislature. A big furor now, people flapping over getting to the flat tax. That's not a good thing. We need to be pushing HB 25. We need to be pushing the fair tax now harder than ever. This is the time. Everyone knows that the IRS has to go. And those people in Washington who know the IRS has to go and who want to keep some semblance of the power that the tax code gives them, they're jumping on the fair tax or the flat tax bandwagon right away because it lets them hold on to that power. I tell you what, you heard what I had to say about 436. Get a hold of your representatives and your senator and in Jefferson City, your state, and let them know how you feel about 436. I'm not here to try to sway you on that. I gave you my opinion. You have a voice there, and you need to use it. Don't let this just be a party politics thing. Don't let this thing just get overridden because we're all Republicans and we can. Think this thing through. Two wrongs don't make a right in my mind. And then last but far from least, maybe last but most, we want to send along a special thank you to our friend Carl Bearden, who came along to talk to us about this absolutely unconstitutional thing that Governor Wrongway J. Nixon has done in cloistering away $400 million of your money, locking it in a drawer so that no one can use it. Money that's there, money that's available, money that's budgeted, money that's appropriated, that he has stolen from the taxpayers of the state of Missouri to make some sort of nasty and erroneous political point. You need to be getting a hold of your representatives. You need to be getting a hold of your senator. You need to be telling them, veto this piece of legislation or override the veto of this piece of legislation that reduces Missouri's individual and corporate income taxes for the first time since 1921. First of all, override that veto. And secondly, find a way to get that $400 million back. This is an unconstitutional move by the governor of the state of Missouri, and it needs to be undone. Okay, I'll be back on Saturday night with one of my favorites, the Fair Tax Show. Join us then. I'd love to talk to you at 347-677-1835. Now is the time for the Fair Tax. I'm Dave. This has been the Hour of Truth. Good night. God bless you.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.